Nick, good morning.
Morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us here on The Daily. So the issues behind this reforms, what kind of problems do we see cropping up? What kind of problems are being raised by Labor and some of the independents?
Well, the first step, of course, is to reflect a bit on the electoral system as it stands. Mm-hmm. At the moment, the laws require that when a voter casts a ballot in the Senate, under what we call the single transferable vote proportional system, and we're already losing large numbers of your audience, I can tell, under the laws as they stand, you technically have to cast a preference for every candidate. Now, prior to 1984, when you voted in the Senate, all you got were lists of names, no party affiliations, and you had to fill in every square, and you had to fill it in from one to however many candidates there were, and you had to do it in numerical order. And if you didn't do that properly, if you made a mistake, your vote would be rendered informal.
Mm.
We used to have 10 to 11% informal voting rates in Senate elections in every state for years and years. Tended to disadvantage Labor because people of lower socioeconomic background, people who for whom English wasn't their main language, they are the ones who tended to make mistakes on the ballot. So when Labor got into government in 1983, the Australian Democrats had the balance of power in the Senate, Labor changed the electoral system. They brought in party affiliation, so you now know which party all the candidates belong to, and they brought in this group vote ticket thing, this above the black line vote, where you could give a single preference above the black line, and you were assumed, you were deemed to be voting for the official party ticket. And what this meant was, first of all, Australian voters adopted this scheme with great enthusiasm. Over 90% of Australians vote above the black line. They give a single preference in Senate elections, and away they go. Meanwhile, below the black line, the party secretariats, the executives of all of these political parties, were doing deals with each other in the exchange of preferences. First, the big parties dominated this process, and they used the GBT to freeze out parties they didn't like, the Nuclear Disarmament Party at one stage, Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party. Then the minor parties got wind of how to play this game, and they started to do it as well. In the 2013 Senate election, as you rightly say, a number of minor party candidates, mainly from the right-wing minor party candidates, so they were picking up seats at the expense of the coalition, were elected to the Senate. You made the point that they got on very small primary votes, but I would remind you that that's not how the system works. You can only assess the proportionality of the system after the allocation of both preferences and surpluses. Because if it was the case that people shouldn't be in the Senate because they only get a small primary vote, the second-place Labor candidate and the second-place Liberal candidate in each state ticket wouldn't be there either, because they got primary votes even lower than some of the micro-party candidates. So the reforms that are being proposed, to cut to the chase, are to allow voters to cast their preferences above the black line. What we're not sure about, and I think there's a very important power struggle going on between the government and the Greens, and Nick Xenophon, who's the other important player in this, because with the government senators and the Greens and Nick Xenophon voting together, they will have a majority in the Senate. They'll be able to bring in the changes. What we're not clear about is the coalition wants to have a system that allows you to give a simple one preference above the black line, and your vote can still be formal, and the vote would only be counted for the ticket that you voted for, the party ticket. Whereas the Greens are talking about making people cast at least six preferences above the black line. That will increase the complexity of the process, and presumably one of the consequences would be a rise in informal voting.
Well, of course, you know, we do have these bedsheet-sized voting forms that we're going to the polls with in this day and age, and obviously it does make it very, very complicated to keep track of all these problems.
Sorry, Sean, let me just say something here, because this has been lost in the debate.
Mm.
When the Parliament looked at this stuff, that was one of the issues they picked up on was the exponential increase in the number of political parties that were being created. So there were proposals to try and crack down on party formation, but the Greens have jettisoned all of that. These reforms do not in themselves mean that there will be less number of parties enrolling. They do not in themselves mean that the ballot papers will be any smaller than they were in the past. That side of the operation has been completely lost. What these reforms are all about, they are designed to try and prevent the right-of-centre minor parties, who usually don't accumulate a very large primary vote on their own. Unlike the Greens have become a lightning rod for the disaffected left wing. And so they can get quite a substantial primary vote.
Mm.
They win Senate positions, even though they don't get a quota. Usually they win it with a little bit of overflow of Labor surplus. But on the right-hand side of the political spectrum, there is no single right-wing party that picks up that sort of vote. The party that came closest to doing that last time was the Palmer United Party, but they're in disarray now, and presumably they won't get much of a vote in the next election. So the right-of-centre, the far-right vote, which was quite substantial in the last election, it was between 15 to 20%, that's an enormous number of voters, was spread out over a range of these parties. And that's why it would look quite odd that one of these parties should eventually pop up. But if you run the result of the last election, the vote of the last Senate election, through the new proposed rules, it doesn't actually change the result that much. The only real casualties would be, interestingly, would be Ricky Muir, of course, everyone's favourite whipping boy in Victoria. That seat would go back to the Liberals. Jackie Lambie in Tasmania would not have got her seat. The Liberals would have got that seat. But interestingly, Sarah Hanson-Young, the Green in South Australia, would not have won her seat. That would have gone to Labor. And Xenophon would have picked up a second seat there. So there wouldn't have been that much difference. I rather suspect that we're going to find the next election that neither of the major parties will end up controlling the Senate. But what may happen, though, is that quite a number of votes will be basically disenfranchised, either because they'll be informal, that depends on how complex the above the black line voting requirements will be, or because people don't realise that there are no more preference allocations anymore, and that after they vote for a candidate, once the vote for that candidate and the candidate's running mate in the ticket is completed, the vote will then die. It becomes what we call an exhausted vote. So, but of course, that all depends on what the voting behaviour at the next election will be. That's very hard to predict.
I mean, it seems like it would be an increase in transparency, obviously a streamlining between the two major parties, but would this diminished role for crossbenchers in the Senate have an impact on policy making in this country that maybe not so democratic, so fair to the Australian public?
Well, I mean, that always begs the question, what does democracy mean? I actually have my doubts that the reform system will necessarily result in the domination of the Senate by either Labor, which is highly unlikely. Labor's key problem in Senate elections is that, ironically, since they brought in this group vote ticket system in the 1980s, Labor's primary vote has fallen into the 30s, and you can't win a majority of Senate seats with that sort of vote. The coalition primary vote sits up there in the 40s, and they've got a chance of picking up an extra seat in one or two states, but it's a very, very remote possibility. The most likely outcome, of course, will be what we've had in the past, that there'll be a group of crossbenchers who will hold the balance of power. But this is the key point. At the moment, the crossbenchers who are holding the balance of power, a combination of by comparison, comparatively left-wing and comparatively right-wing minor parties, with Nick Xenophon, the key player in the middle. What Mr. Xenophon, or Senator Xenophon, wants to do, he wants to become the key player. And that's what these reforms will do. These reforms will consolidate the crossbench to being basically a two-way operation between the Greens and Senator Xenophon.
Well, Nick, thank you very much. Do appreciate you coming on. It's an interesting idea, and we'll have to see how it does go before the next election. Do appreciate your time.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.